Fed Talks is a weekly podcast featuring federal program staff from the Georgia Department of Education and Georgia's public schools. For many individuals, the purpose of federally funded programs is unknown. Through its Fed Talk series, the Georgia Department of Education is sharing more information on the ways Georgians are leveraging federal funds to serve Georgia students and Georgia schools. Welcome to Fed Talks.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the continuing conversation of our Title II Part A program. We're in our third podcast in this series, which will be our last one. It's been a real enlightening opportunity to learn about Title II. And for everybody's information, I'm Craig Gears with Federal Programs at the Department of Education, and I have my colleagues.
I have John White with Federal Programs.
Sean Owen with Federal Programs.
And our guest, of course, is continuing to be Carly Ambler. So thank you, Carly, for coming back and finishing off the conversation with us, and I think we'll jump right into it. John, you want to? Who's going to get started?
Sean, you take the first one.
Can you, Carla, remind the audience the purpose of Title IIA and what is what commonly is used to fund those?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a formula grant, and we work predominantly with teachers and school leaders, and if it's with private schools, with other school leaders, so sometimes like heads of school. And we work mostly on continuing education and just making sure that we have effective support in place. So sometimes recruitment and retention to make sure that we have the right people where we need them, we get to keep them too.
You know, in the last series we talked about the state perspective and the challenges that programs were experiencing, if any. So we're curious about Title II. From your perspective here at the state, what are some of the common challenges that are in the provision of the law or in your implementation here in the state that you've noticed?
Absolutely. Well, let me just start by saying I feel like I'm really blessed. This is one of the few areas where the work that we do is almost always positive, because it's really a lot of value added. There, you don't have a lot of teachers who complain all the time about that opportunity to learn that brand new thing down, you know, that they have rolled out, this technology or something else. Mm-hmm. So most of what we see is actually a celebration of the learning and the progress that we've made as a country. So it's really pretty cool as a whole. And nobody complains when they're able to get high quality staff in place for recruitment.
Absolutely.
So that's a lot of, so we're really in a good place in general. Some of the challenges, we have a couple. One is that under NCLB, we had a pretty formulaic way that we could spend the money, right? And so a lot of that freed up when we authorized, and we're now operating under ESSA. So that doesn't sound like it would be a challenge, but it kind of is. When you take people and you change everything and you say, okay, what do you want to do? Sometimes they have a hard time adjusting to, well, can I do this? And you're like, I don't know. Can you? You know, what does it sound like? What are the opportunities? So, you know, sometimes our schools have limited staff. So thinking innovatively, having the opportunity and the freedom to do that extra research, you know, they're so caught up in the immediacy of students in a building and making things happen that sometimes they haven't had that opportunity. And so, you know, fostering those discussions, making sure that they network across districts to see the opportunities that are out there. Sometimes that has been a little bit of a challenge, making sure that we don't just do the same thing we've always been doing, that we're able to branch out.
John and Sean, I'd say that's a common concern across all the federal programs under ESSA now, because we've basically unleashed all kinds of opportunities based on the needs assessment. So that's why it's so critical that that needs assessment be very broad, so that you can identify all those things that you want to do.
Well, and I think it really challenges both the state as leaders, but districts as leaders, and even teachers in a classroom. You have to find the right mix for the teachers that you have on staff, the leaders you have on staff, and the students that you serve. So what's best on the north end of the state may not be what's best on the south end of the state. It gives you the autonomy and flexibility to meet the needs of the individuals you serve, but it also gives you an awesome responsibility to meet the needs of the people that you serve. And so finding a really good balance where everybody benefits from that is a challenge. It takes really great professionals, which we have, in order to make that happen. So definitely making sure that as we get new leaders in the state of Georgia, that they're up to that challenge as well, that making sure that we have that opportunity.
And this is not a small grant. I mean, we're talking a very nice influx of additional funds through this grant?
It's enough to provide professional mm-hmm. learning. So yeah. we have usually we're in the range of about 54 to about 60 million in any given
yeah.
year.
Yeah.
And so districts, some of our small charter schools get as little as 3,000, yeah. but you could still offer a couple of good professional learning opportunities for that amount. You could do some book studies.
Right.
You know, send somebody to do a train the trainer and right. then come back and provide training for your entire staff. I mean, there's some good opportunities for it.
That's where the prioritization of needs really comes into play, that you do have a limited amount of funding, so mm-hmm. you really need to target those things that are of highest impact.
Mm-hmm. But our largest school districts
sure.
can get upwards of $2 million, and they support a lot of teacher induction programs. So bringing the teachers on, making sure that they're prepared and that they stay.
Mm-hmm.
And in metro areas, that can be kind of difficult. They have a lot of workforce, and we also have some unique challenges in the metro area. So making sure that we bring them on and we keep them mm-hmm. is really critical too. Same thing with the rural areas.
Sure. Yeah.
We have some
right.
issues getting them in.
Yeah.
So what kind of network or networking opportunities do LEAs have where they can work together so they can learn about that? Because you've identified these challenges, and it can't just be from the state telling districts how to do it. They need to learn from each other. Are there opportunities for that?
Absolutely. So a number of our regional education service agencies are RESAs. In Georgia, they're funded out of the General Assembly. They're a line item in the budget. And then they also partner closely with the Georgia Department of Education to provide services. Some of them offer job-alike meetings in the different areas so that no matter what topic you're working on, you could come together with colleagues and peers who have unique experiences in their districts to talk about what they're doing. And we've actually really seen them leverage those opportunities to do their own professional learning groups where they're able to advocate for change and guidance, where they're able to read things and understand things or work together to provide something that they wouldn't have been able to provide on their own.
So the districts could kind of collaborate together and
Absolutely.
On an initiative and pool their funds and mm-hmm. however that would work out, but they could collaborate and work together, right?
Oh, yeah. And we've even had some coordinators who thought, wouldn't this be easier if I could do this with a partner?
Right.
And they've reached out to the districts around them and have, really built up that whole community just by reaching out to each other.
Great. So how do you measure the impact of some of the things, or how do you expect the districts to measure the impact of some of the initiatives they take on under this grant?
I think that looking at this has been a challenge as a nation. We have a lot of professional organizations who are exploring different ways to determine effectiveness because providing professional learning doesn't necessarily mean that a student's going to do better, but we want it to. So, looking at a little bit at the culture of that and saying, well, if I have you in a room and you go through training with me, does that mean that if you liked my training, you will go back and actually do it? Right? So there's sometimes a delay in that. And then if you do it, it's not perfect at first. And you have several months in which you're trying to make it happen and you're trying new things. It doesn't always immediately impact those students. It may take a couple of months, depending on how you roll out professional learning. If you think about companies, sometimes they start with a target audience. They'll try something at a restaurant in a region. And then if it works well, they'll expand it out to mm-hmm. other areas. Well, school districts aren't all that different. Sometimes they'll start with their master teacher group, and then they'll work out to some other grade levels, and then they'll work out to other content areas or wherever it is. And so if you do that, your professional learning can have an impact not in just a current year, but over a multi-year period. So in Georgia, we try to be really flexible about what that looks like with a Title II grant, and we ask them what effectiveness they will look at.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do try to have some hard data, but we also leverage that opportunity. So in 1 year, it might be that teacher data changes,
mm-hmm.
and in consecutive years, it might be that student data changes.
And I know that's a challenge for all programs because mm-hmm. there are multiple things happening in a school building, so it's hard to say that one particular activity
mm-hmm.
was what caused the success. But
Absolutely.
I appreciate the fact that you're trying to whittle that down and get to the point where you can show that the professional learning was what
mm-hmm.
made an impact.
Well, and above and beyond, if we're going to invest this much as taxpayers,
sure.
don't you want to know that things
Absolutely.
Are changing,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
I mean, if we say that Georgia gets 60,000, I'd want to know that it is helping.
Yeah.
So I think that when you put it that way, districts are really willing to partner to make sure that it's a good investment.
So, Carly, I really liked what you were talking about some of the things that are being done in Georgia and some of the ways that Title IIA is being used. You've been in this role for some time now, so can you share with us just some additional things that you've seen that have worked really well, some lessons learned, some ways that collaboration is working extremely well in our state?
Well, I just had the opportunity at our federal programs conference in June members of my team worked closely with some of our districts to highlight some of the practices, just like you're talking about, that are in place. And we got a lot of really good feedback about it, because that's one thing for me to say it, but it's absolutely a different thing to hear from the source, the people who are day-to-day implementing it. So one thing that we have in place in Georgia that my boss, Cindy Saxon, is working really hard on is Grow Your Own. So it's pretty easy to get in a paraprofessional in Georgia. The kind of the minimum requirements are 2 years of college, or the ability to pass one of our content area tests to show that you're equipped to provide instructional support in a classroom. But those people in their day-to-day jobs are building a huge knowledge base about what could happen. So using them as a first line for recruitment is really critical. And so we have a number of our districts who have a hard time bringing in teachers who are now working to grow your own. And so it's both an investment in climate and an investment in future staff, because you've got them on, you're saying, I value you and I value your experience and your expertise and I want to bring you on. And they're helping partner with 2A funds to send them through school to get them ready to be a teacher. And then we bring them on as a teacher. It's a lot easier to find those individuals with that 2 years of college experience than it is someone who is already ready to go. And if you bring on a paraprofessional, they're already in a place where they have access for student teaching. So you can work in order to make sure that with the scheduling in an innovative way, if you're willing to build the task force that way. We're also doing a lot with teacher leaders. We want to make sure that we have teachers that are in place. Some of our teachers are meant to be teachers for life. They really want to, but they're amazing. And we don't want to lose that opportunity. We want to make sure that we really capture it and maximize it and leverage it to our advantage. And so giving them the opportunities to become teacher leaders is really critical. So not only will we pay for some of the testing to be teacher leaders, we'll pay for these endorsements where they can go back and get continuing education just for that. And putting them in place, they're still in a classroom, they're still teaching, but they're reaching out to other members in their teaching community to help build them up too. You know, they're modeling the practices that we really want to have in place in order to get everybody else excited, enthusiastic, keep them going with this work, because it's critical work, but it has a lot of potential, a lot of opportunities, a lot to be excited about. So having those people in place is really nice. And then, of course, we need our future leaders. So this grant also gives you the opportunity to build those leaders. So while maybe you're a teacher leader or while you're an assistant principal, you can go back and get some training so that you can become a principal and take over a school. Or if you're destined for central office, you know, we find that a lot of our HR directors, a lot of our federal programs folks, a lot of our professional learning folks, they were in the schools and moved up into these positions. So making sure that they're equipped to continue to support the schools and the communities where they exist. So, I mean, there's a lot that's going on where we really bolster examples. That foundation.
Yeah, well, this has really been informative for me, because, I mean, I knew quite a bit about 2A, but you have certainly enlightened us as to really, I think, the opportunities that it offers are amazing. I love the grow your own.
Yeah.
That is, and I can see that being so applicable to so many of our districts, because they have great parapros. Who maybe can't take the time to go back to school full time, but yet they have the opportunity. Wow, that's awesome.
Well, and you know what? We can also recruit people who are in another field. You know, the worry that when you get to your 30s or your 40s that you can't change careers. You can in education. You can leave those fields. You can come and be an educator. It's a shameless plug. Anybody who wants to come, we need you. But schools can recruit them, and they can use 2A money to pay for alternative certification. So you can have the job, you're earning the paycheck, you're with the kids, but you're also going back to school to get the credentials you need to support them.
All right. Well, I think that is that's awesome great. Place. What a great way to leave this with that positive ability that the grant funds allow. So. All right, I'm going to say thank you very much, Carly. It really has been informative. You guys have any last thoughts or comments?
Thank you for being with us, Carly.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. Very helpful.
Well, thanks for having me. Anytime.
Okie doke. Thanks,
everyone.
See ya.